find you.
Oh, okay, yes. I'll volunteer.
Wide open.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, well, do you want to make a comment, Tom?
For the public.
I'm sorry?
Public comments are now in order, and you're the only public we've ever had, so.
Being that I'm so new to the group, and I mean, don't, it's probably, it's primarily financial, is that?
Yes.
Yeah. One thing that I'm curious about over the years is the sewer fees that were brought up 5 or 6 years ago. This is a citizen. And what that amounts to now, it's so much each house, each property owner. What the pool, the size of the money pool is, and what's been going on, I mean, like an accounting of that whole process that we were taxed with 6 years ago, 7 years ago. I'd like to, as a citizen, like to know what's going on with that. Just from a, this could be financial, that everything, you know, boils down to finance after a while. But as we drive around town, I come from the construction business, so that's kind of my, the one fellow that's been here so long maintaining the streets, he needs better signage, not a traffic plan, but I travel Taft to get home and get out of town, and that's kind of one of his favorite places with all the islands there with all the plants on it, which I think is nice.
You're talking about the gardening aspect.
He doesn't have the right protection, okay, from a signage standpoint. And, you know, if he gets hit sometime, God forbid, but it happens.
Yeah.
You know, we're on the hook as a city, you know, him, you know, hurt, because he just puts a few cones out. Mm-hmm. Since you brought me into the room, mm-hmm, I didn't come down to the city to complain about that. But since I was invited to sit here as an observer of the city,
we might as well.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody could mention that to whatever department that is here at the city, I think it'd be helpful in the long run. He does a great job, but he's not very well protected when he's out there, you know, jumping off on the curb, you know, doing his work. So those are the, you know, all in all. Referencing the city, you know, I mean, I don't think it's do a good job. Morning.
Come on.
The other, I'm Tom.
Hi, Steve Franks.
Yeah. You look like the guy on TV, and you, every now and then I tune into the council meeting.
That's his second time.
Oh. Yeah. he's only part-time.
The other thing that's kind of disturbing to me is, and I don't know the exact title of it, but where we're subdividing the properties for granny flats or whatever you call
ADUs,
this.
Yeah.
You know, from I'm Tom Malloy, and I come from the construction business, and Lynn asked me to sit in.
Sure.
And I've been a resident here since 76. So.
Wow.
Wow. From Redondo Beach, born in Los Angeles, raised in Inglewood, went to Loyola High School.
From Hawthorne, born and reared.
So here we are. Okay. You know, my wife was born in Lawndale. Yeah. A couple of South Bay guys.
Yeah, right there. Holly Glen.
So anyway, you know, we have this property, it's not our property, but the property over here, the famous Sully Miller property. You know, and everybody, this has been going on, I think, almost ever since I've been here. And it was actually a construction yard back when I came here for Sully Miller, and they used it for mining aggregate and things like that. And since then, this has been a ping pong ball bouncing around with Orange Park Acres and whoever else. But, you know, one of the biggest complaints of those people who are petitioning against it is, you know, the traffic, you know, traffic studies and all the traffic it's going to cause, you know, on the extension of Candela. And, I mean, what, and then at the same time, the state turns around and tells you that you have to, we're going to make you subdivide your lots. And what kind of traffic is that going to bring? You know, I mean, if everybody did it, and thank God not a lot of people are thinking about doing that here in the ballpark. But if everybody did it, obviously, most likely the traffic would double just in this city. You know, but nobody thinks about that when the state of California starts dictating as to what we're supposed to do with our property. Yet those people, you know, always get stopped because of, the major thing is one of the major things is traffic. It's going to increase traffic so much. That, I mean, this is such a contradiction that I don't understand it, and I don't know why the city is not more outspoken and fight the issue like, I think it's Costa Mesa or Huntington Beach.
Huntington Beach.
Mm-hmm. You know, Huntington Beach has spent $13 million fighting the state.
Yeah.
I say, wow.
And what's happened is they just lost in federal court on the appeal again to put a stay on the state's thing. So they're arguing that they're a charter city. We're not a charter city. We're a general law city. So we are subject to the laws of the state. So the general law, the charter law, their argument is, the problem with that argument, the court has said, is that the state law enables them to be a charter city, so the state law preempts their local law. So the state controls this, unfortunately. As far as that Sully Miller property, it's actually not even within the boundaries of Villa Park.
No, I understand that. I'm just talking about the contradiction.
Yeah, is a huge thing. Yeah, and you're talking about SB9, the splitting of the properties and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
These are, the SB9, the way that works, we don't have a choice. The only thing we can do is fight it on certain infrastructure. I mean, it's not really germane to this group, but just as a sharing type of thing. The city has been vocal about it, but we're also at the mercy of not having a housing element approved. If they don't approve our housing element, we could be subject to $600,000 a month in fines. And $600,000 a month would devastate a city like Villa Park. And you know, Brad was around when they fined us $100,000 years ago. So the state has no problems.
They don't play games.
They're stopping around. And they are right now suing Huntington Beach with the Attorney General. They've got HCD. They are basically, there's what they call the builder's choice, the builder's remedy, which you may know about. Huntington Beach is going to suffer for this, unfortunately, because the state's using them as sort of the example. And it is, I mean, I certainly understand and I agree with what Huntington Beach is doing, but they're basically fighting a very big losing battle. And you know, what is the Mark Twain thing, you know, argue with someone who buys their ink by the barrel.
Yeah.
And in Sacramento, they have the money to outdo anybody's local legal fees. So that's unfortunate. So Huntington Beach has actually asked other cities to help pitch in, but, you know, I don't want
to. And I appreciate what you brought to us, but my issue was the contradiction.
Oh, you know? It is a huge... The state, yeah.
Now, I mean, some of these are within, we could touch on them, and some of them are not really in our area, but why don't we go through and, you know, you want to see what we do
right.
And then...
That's what I was, when you asked me to talk right away, I'm sitting there going, wait a minute.
No, but I'm sure both of us, all of us, would be glad to talk to you about any of these issues and what we
have to apologize to you. I'm actually on a phone call at 8:30 with... the housing and community development, trying to get our plan approved.
Yes.
So at 8:30, so I'm trying to do two different meetings. So
we got you all warmed up.
I just wanted you to get, I wanted to step in and I get a chance to meet you because Lynn said she was bringing you. Lynn's are very confidently going to handle Ashley. If there's anything that comes up, my apologies. When HCD just said, you know, you sort of like, you got to take their call. So I've got to go and
it.
I apologize.
That's it. I understand.
But anyway. Nice meeting
you. No problem.
Good luck.
Thanks. No, if I thought what we'd do is kind of quickly go over some of the things that we normally don't even spend any time on, but that way you would get an idea of what things we spend most of our time on, and then we can fit these in as needed.
Very good.
So thank you for your comments. I appreciate that. And we can do some investigation of some of these things. So we have to approve the minutes first or not, as you wish. So the minutes you have a copy of. Have you had a chance to review that? Any motions?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So you can look at those and see what things we normally cover there. So the next... back here. Investment portfolio status report is
okay. Yeah, so there's like a packet of this, and so this is like a most current March treasury report. This is our draft, so we're pending Mr. Underwood's his review and approval, and this copy will go to the councils for our April agenda. So thus far everything look as usual, nothing unusual on the report. And I do want to point out on our next page, which is our cash flows and also the estimated cash flows right here. We can review that in conjunction where we at right here. So thus far, overall, we have about $7 million that we still have on hand. I do want to point out that at the very far end column of the June column, I did update our annual capital improvement projects. So we in the middle of doing our budgets for next year's and also the projections for year end. And where we at stand right now, as far as the major CIP, we have the annual street improvement project that is gonna be commence mid-May and for about 3 months. And that is currently around about like $2 million to $2.1 million. And the construction award is subject to council's approval for this council meeting.
So they have not approved that expenditure yet?
Oh, not yet. We have to award the construction contract. Yeah. The bids has come out higher than what the design engineering has estimated due to the current demands and the supplies, also the construction industry, as well as the inflations and the materials. But thus far, we have enough funding sources for this project. And my next one is our next project is Cerro Villa Drive. That is estimated $500,000. I don't have the actuals at this point. Out of the $500,000, $200,000 is going to be federally funded. We intend to have it's pending for approval. So it's a federal grant. It's up to $200,000. But we can't advertise the project at this point until we get the approval from the federal agency. So our city engineer has been working hard on that. So I just want to bring that to your attention. So this is kind of like the upcoming big expenditures for perhaps till the first quarter of the new fiscal year. And we're going to
What program is the federal agency?
Yes, it's going to be under the transportation. So it's the USDOT.
Okay.
And then it will pass through the Caltrans.
Okay. And is there any particular reason why this project falls under that?
We just kind of we would like to just basically get the funding. So there is federal grants available. Okay. So for us and then and our city engineer and they apply for the grant. So
okay.
And then in addition to that, actually out of the 500, we have roughly about 100,000 that is a reimbursable agreement that we have with the city of Orange, and is going to be the reimbursable cost.
Okay, so of this 500, 200 may be covered by the federal agency and some might be covered by Orange.
Yes, that's correct. Okay. Roughly about 100,000. based on our current estimates at this point, until we authorize, get the authorizations from the federal grantor, then we will have to go out for bids. And so that's kind of where we stand right now.
Last time we talked about our CDs.
Yes.
Pause. What is going on with those?
Sure.
Okay.
We looked at, we have, look, go back to the treasurer's report, and you'll see under medium term investments, or actually, this is medium term.
Yeah.
We have two CDs that expire in 2024. One this year, later this year, 2023. Those are, so we buy them, we ladder our CDs, so we have, we meet our, remember our number one goal is preservation of capital, second one is liquidity, and third is rate. So rate is third level of what we look at in terms of our viewpoint. So in terms of that second one of liquidity, we ladder our CDs, so we always have cash coming available for our surprise expenditures, like the hill that went down. I never can explain it right. The wall and the sewer that went
the flood
over there on
Cannon.
That FEMA was going to get involved in and did whatever. So we always want to have that in addition to our 6 months of reserves. We want to have that available to us. So the way we do that, instead of having one come all at one time, we ladder them for a year. And we generally put $200,000 a year. We have two of those coming due in 24, and those happen to be the lowest yield because we'll pick up, when we don't plan to try to play the yield, we hold to maturity, so we play that. So as it goes down, it goes down, when it comes back. We looked at, given the current environment, that because you can buy short-term notes and get 4+%, would it make sense to sell those and to trade out? And then the banking environment came along, and banks who had to sell those types of things because they had to pay for the run for depositors took a big hit, a large bank and a medium bank go out of business. So wasn't the right political atmosphere time to be selling these and get away from our hold to maturity and to drop out for rate? So we backed off on that. And last time we looked at it, there was a small amount, I think I brought it to committee two meetings ago, a small amount we could gain from that. And then last time we brought it back up, and then we had the banking crisis, and then we looked at that and said, this is not the right time to be shifting out. I think which Lynn said, maybe predicting it, maybe two meetings ago, saying, leave it alone for a while. So we left it alone. We didn't go for that analysis. We didn't go for that extra small amount, if we could even get that. It's a very volatile environment, so if the numbers keep changing in terms of the on the margin. So what we'll do is we'll take the USA Bank one that matures 10/27, and that one happened to be in high rate times, and we'll increase that one to another one from the pool. And then we'll do the same thing for Sallie Mae rates next year. So that was the analysis. We backed off in the analysis saying, okay, get out of the numbers and up to it.
I think the insurance was the big, I was kind of pushing to move into some kind of a cash assets fund, but then we, you know, they're not insured, and in the current environment it seemed too scary to do that to me.
Let me comment on a couple other points on the Treasurer's report. The short-term investments, you probably noticed that those rates have come up. So what's happened is they have enough liquidity in their account that they can change and go after some short-term investments. There was a note, if you haven't seen it, we'll send it around, but there was a note from the Orange County Treasurer sharing that we can balance that. As opposed to the banks that were in these very long-term environments, then they had to pay the short-term deposits. They didn't have the ability to flex around. So meanwhile, so they're earning 2.8, 2.9. Again, not high numbers, but high numbers given this environment. And then Lee and I talked about, and this I think you saw this last time, we were in balance heavily in one because of a heavier rate. We went back to equal balance in these things basically because the rates were going to level out. So they changed a little bit. For a while, Lake was above OICP, which was unusual. And so we shifted back some money back, and now you see it's basically equal in both of those.
Is the farmers and merchants still at that 0.05%?
Yeah, that's correct.
Wow, so they haven't gone up at all.
No.
That's a good point.
Well, that's they're a savings account. A good
point. I mean, most banks have.
Right. The majority of banks have, or well, it's in the Wall Street Journal headlines every day, but the banks that are held to that rate, the 4 and 5% stuff, market funds, so force the banks to come up. So they're predicting now the banks will go and not be quite as profitable as they were this quarter because they're going to have to, they had this free money that they got from the depositors before. Now they're going to pay for that money like the old days. So I think we ought to talk to FMM about why that is. The good news, FMM is probably one of the more conservative regional banks.
Very strong bank. And they don't have to raise the rates. I mean,
120 years or whatever. But yeah. you talk to them. So I was on the board of the college, junior college, and we went to FMM. They're just solid in every way. I mean, it's there. But on the other hand, we ought to talk about that's a little embarrassing, quite frankly, that they can offer that.
Yeah, but it's been going up for quite a while. I mean, it hasn't been just the last few months. People have been inching up their
just
money
for a
market
standard
rates.
Money market account.
Just for the standard money market, yeah.
What is it right now? About one, maybe?
Well, you know what? I see 2.5% and 3%.
For a standard account?
For a standard money market.
Wow, that is low then.
Yeah. Oh, no, this is
ridiculous.
Yeah, so,
and banks are advertising some of that just because they don't want to lose their depositors.
Right.
So I'll be glad to make a call over there and talk about that.
Yeah, my
number
is
good. I really trust this bank. I just gave them my trust.
Regional.
Huh?
I thought so.
They're regional.
Yeah, they're regional banks, so they're kind of. They're
yeah,
not
they're in that, they're in that top regional tier. Category that says they could be vulnerable for
should
sure.
Should be a little higher rate.
Well, I think they got the same issue. You know, I think thinking about their, if you met their management, they're all local and some right on the edge here at Villa Park in Orange. They're very conservative to act, very slow to act. So I would suspect they may be in the process. That's why I want to talk to them.
They're very traditional. They're a family-run bank.
The son of the owner lives here.
Does it really?
Yeah.
That bank was started by somebody in 1909 or something.
Right.
Yeah. It was an oil field bank in Long Beach.
But it also would be worth, I noticed in Sharon's email out to the basically the city.
It's your friend for this thing.
They at the county looked at the financials of each of those banks they're invested in, and I think that's wise. When we're conservative in other manner, so we ought to be actually picking up their financial statements and looking at what they have, the money that could run away and cause it. Because who would have thought in some of the banks now that it's so easy now, as you all know, you just click a few things and pretty soon you took $200,000 out of that bank that you shouldn't have had in it, and it ran up to the big bank. So the big banks are going to survive. Small banks are probably going to, some of them are going to survive because they do the majority of loans to small businesses and local businesses, so you need them. At Anderson, we did a study about the banking environment some time ago when there were 15,000 banks, and it was clear that Canada has what? Four or five banks. Australia has four or five banks, nothing underneath it. And we had 15,000 small banks and I don't know how many regional banks at the time, and then, 10, 25 large banks, or whatever it was. So it was clear the small banks were going to have to be reduced in size. And sure enough, that's what happened over this from 90 in the 2000s. So it's down to a level. I think the regional banks, I don't understand how they're going to continue to be in business. I mean, it's almost like the strategy that Porter talks about at Harvard. if you're the highest priced group marketing wise, you're going to survive because there's always a market for the high end luxury stuff. If you're the low end, a cost saver, you're vulnerable. You have to keep make sure your costs keep the lower. And if you're in the middle, you're dead because you're neither cost efficient or you're not luxury extravagant for that top end. So anyway, I think my sense is as treasurer, we're going to take a look at the bankings that we have and look at that finances, involve you guys if we have needed more expertise on that, and then call FMM on your point that that's not market sensitive at this point.
But as long as you would stay under the federal insurance,
yeah.
I mean, wouldn't it? I mean, it should matter that you look at the institution, but as long as the deposits are under the $250,000, you haven't, like you say, laddered.
Well, we're not at F&M.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, because it's
we're not at F&M.
But you're right.
F&M are above the insurance limit.
Are we?
Yeah.
The penny count.
I mean the money market.
Just saying, if you use that as a criteria. Oh,
yeah.
The insurance had her Orange County Treasurer had an interesting point in it. If you're public monies, you have to have all that money that goes into that financial institution, they have to have securitized assets against that money. So, for instance, Orange County CIP, she has way more than $250,000 in institutions, but she has 110% securitization, I think it is, of assets. So if that entity were to go out of business, they have to produce that securitized asset that then you have, of course, the hassle of... taking that one on, at least you're protected.
Instant.
They're collateralized. So.
Yeah, and similarly, the federal government. If you're one of these doom and gloomers in Idaho or something, that money, there's only so much in the deposit fund, and you can have a treasury secretary that says, "Oh, that institution will cover everything." That's what she said for at least those institutions for maybe good and valid reasons.
Maybe.
But the FDIC is not.
We'd rather not be in those situations. So in OICP, there's not a lot of cities in that because when it went bankrupt in those days, those cities lost some money and left it. Little Park somehow survived that. And now she's got it covered. I mean, it's really well run. Late when I came on board, I don't know, 8 years ago or so, I was concerned that the government would reach in, state would reach in and take that money that we had up there. It was solid. That was when it's solid. It's protected. I went every which way from that, and that was the reason because Brown would reach down and take, we'll move that money over here. Same way Newsom will do the kind of same thing. They can't touch that money. Yeah. OICP said the other day. She said they're discretionary funds, the discretionary deposits, which are us, we're not mandated that we have to use OICP, less than 2% of their total assets. So the rest of their funds are county and agency assets, which it's mandated they must use OICP for their investments. So we'll be first out to be covered in that piece. Enough on that, I guess. So. I'm putting together for you guys to review, and then I'd like to send to the supervisors a short memo on our investment strategy and for monies and the reserve of it, because it's very conservative. It mirrors the council's conservatism in terms of what we're doing. Some of it by county law, by state law, if you read the California laws on us. They only let us go out 5 years. That's why we only go 5 years. So we hold to maturity, so we don't have to play market rate. So, and we are very conservative in our expenditures. And now we have a cash flow statement, which we've never had in the past decade. Congratulations. Thank you very much. Way more detail than we probably need, but a good help for you guys in terms of financial process.
Yeah, thank you.
On that case, I approve. I'm going to get a new city manager then.
All in favor? It depends if you got that housing element approved.
Exactly.
So are there any other comments on the treasurer's report and the cash flow?
Do you need $1.5 million to operate?
Yeah, so I was going to, thank you for pointing out, I was going to make a comment on that. In addition, thanks for your detailed explanation, Mr. Underwood. So I just want to add another comment on that. Out of the 1.5 for the money market account that we have, I know it seems like a huge dollars right now, but that is also like help us to fund all of our operating expenses. So I don't want to keep a whole lot of money at high balances on our checking account. So therefore, like any excess funds that we have, we kind of just put it into the money market account, even though I understand it's very low interest at this point, but even though we're still earning some pennies. And meantime, like we are, since as I mentioned, share with you all about the capital project. So, I mean, that 1.5 is gonna go quick once we start the constructions of the street project. So I just wanna mention that.
But you will check on the rate and if it
still is
the 0.05 or there's...
Yes, thank you for pointing it out. Yeah, I will definitely. Yeah, I'll reach out to FMB about the rate. So, thank you.
Anything else, Brad? You?
No.
No. Okay, now I'm just going to insert a little editorial here, but as the treasurer pointed out, we don't have to keep our money in the short-term investment, state and local agency investment fund, which is a fairly recent change. So we have invested some of the money for the deferred annuity retirement accounts and things in another agency, and that's what the PARS is. So the PARS performance is the performance on that kind of long-term investment, if you will. Okay, so what do we have on that, on PARS?
Yes, so... part of the packet, you see this like a 3 months statement since our last meeting of our PARS statement. So like, for example, for this January, you see like some earnings. There's like a little increase. And then when it comes to, because of the, like city treasurer mentioned about in February, that's when the crisis happened in our banking, in the banking environment. So therefore that's the earnings has decreased a bit. And then March, it creeped up a little bit. So it is a very volatile environment right now since where everything stands. And for our next budget cycle, we are, I think as our city manager has mentioned, so out of for next year's budget cycle, we have proposed to the council is that out of the 100,000, so 50,000 to... will go towards our pension, and then the other 50,000 is to fund our OPEB unfunded liability.
The health side of it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. What's our percent funded? Did you calculate that recently?
We're about 89% funded.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we are very well funded.
Yeah.
Our goal, remember, was 80-85.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're in excess of that. So we can back off on the annual contribution, as what Lee and I talked about.
Good time.
So now is a good time. We have a liability of the health of about 160,000. So 50,000 roughly tackles a third of it. So if we go after it 3 years in a row, then we pretty much have eliminated that liability as on the books.
Right.
Now we're not making these contributions. If we put it in PARS, we're not making the contributions directly to them, because we're earning the investments, because we don't have to make the contributions to them.
Right.
So we make better interest if we can put it in PARS than we're going to get from them.
So the original strategy was we were going to put 400,000 in to try to get up from 60 or 70%, where 70% or so where we were at, and ride that and see how it was going. And then we put another 100,000 in, would be 500,000.
We're at 600,000 after this year. We'll be at 600,000. The issue, too, is, as you're well aware, PERS, CalPERS, has indicated that they're going to, you know, the rates are going to change again. They're going to drop their discount rate, so we're going to get hit down the road again. So I hate to totally cease making contributions because we're well-funded. So we, you know, and
smart.
The other thing, too, we've got the, this sounds just, Brad, since once the council gets in a habit, it's better, they see that as a norm as opposed to stopping it and trying to start it up again, mm-hmm. which might be more difficult. So our approach was, let's keep them putting something, but back off on how much we're putting in. Let's deal with the other obligation as a part and keep them moving forward. And you know, not throwing too much, you know, the 100,000 is still the 100,000 they're used to, just splitting it a little different and keeping the council in that mode of thinking as opposed to saying, we don't have to do it anymore because right. we're in good shape. Because yeah. there's a ton of other things like street projects and things that money would go to and it'd be gone.
And if you take the long-term projections, you see that that rate's going to continue to go down, take more money from city yes. services. So the fact that we will have that money set aside.
Now, one of the interesting things is because Lee and I were talking, you know, there's different status of retirees. There's the classic, which were the older, higher rate, and the Pepper, which are the new ones that were, I don't know what year it was, in the early, late
2013.
Mm-hmm. So we only have two classic members at this point. One of them has indicated he's leaving in November, and the other one is Mike, and we hope he never leaves. But anyway, when you go on there, our rates are fairly stable. I mean, we're, you know, because the difference has changed a lot. Now, some of these other cities are going to get hit drastically with that. But we're in fairly good shape as far as our unfunded liabilities are going to go down the road. So there's a little bit of mitigating factor. So we're not paying the higher rate, you know, as much anymore.
So who watches? We watch the investment side of it, or slid into being asked to investigate PARs, and then all of a sudden be asked to keep watching it. But who watches the other side, the pensions, how much you need and how much you put in?
Lee and I are watching it in the council. Okay. We should report to the council each year as part of it. And they, you know, we have as part of the audit each year, the CAFR each year, they have to report on it. We are obligated to state to report to them what our funding levels are, et cetera. Mm. So that's under the GASB rules, we're required to monitor that. So we have an independent auditor each year that does that
and
calculates it for us. We don't actually do the calculation, they do it for us. So we watch that and we look at that.
Yeah. One thing about when you mention these PARS contributions from the city, I would never mention it without that ranking of cities and how it was critical of our not funding our future health care. In other words, that should be part of every discussion to remind the city council that we will get ranked higher as a city if we do this.
Interestingly enough, John Morlock contacted me last week, contacted Lee and us about he wanted to see our CAFR. And I talked to him on the phone and I said, hey, John, we'll send it. You know, here's the link, I'll send it to you. And I said, and by the way, check our health this time because we're going to be putting more money, you know. So,
I think the city council will be more interested in that than any of the financials.
You're right.
We're getting rated highly in John's list of.
We are 12th most financially secure, but we dropped from like 8th because of our health. I remember calling John last year and said, why do we drop? We have no debt obligations. He goes, well, it's because of your health. You know, I said, well, it's $163,000. We could pay it entirely from our reserve right now, but we're not. It's not the prudent thing to do.
Right.
But anyway,
it's not what they were counting.
Yeah.
We want to do what they're counting. Any comments on PARs? Maybe let me ask this specifically of each of you. Is there anyone who thinks we should re-examine our position as to moderate high? In terms of risk towards the PARS account, that we can be in different categories. We have 4 different categories. We talk about this every month now. I think that's wise because, you know, with the current market, I think we should just
show we think about it. We do get the council asking questions. They see these, you know, they see the quarterly reports or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, without context, it doesn't necessarily look great.
Yeah.
You know, Robbie, as in the past, has continually asked, could we do better on our own? So I share that with you guys. So
well, you're not allowed to, number one.
Well, there's a good answer.
Allow cities to basically open to what you would want to invest in for the pensions. you have to have a professional advisor managing that.
No, but I think, yeah, but if
someone else.
But we could put it in this CalPERS.
We could put it into different, instead of giving it to PARS, locking it into what they're getting with a moderate strategy or whatever we have, is there, could we invest it in, you know, have a money management group doing it for us that would have us, you know, earn greater interest or better?
Well, we could put it in the state, too.
Yeah, we could do what we lay for.
And I think that's what we should lay out for them is, oh, do you think we should give it to the state to let them manage it?
So, is he talking within the Section 115 trust or dropping
the trust? No, he's saying dropping, should we be continuing to work? The trust is the trust, but should we be continuing to add money to that trust? Because we might be doing better.
But you have to have a manager of that trust.
Sure.
Defined, which is probably not late. They're not going to manage the trust. You have to have a...
No, he doesn't want to mess with what we have in the trust. He's saying... Going forward, is it wise to continue putting money into the PARS trust as opposed to investing it in LAIF or wherever else? I mean, because he's saying is, you know, if you look at these, it doesn't look great sometimes. It doesn't really look great. You look at it, I almost cringe sometimes when I see the PARS reports.
You have to put it in context with other,
the
overall investment. And I don't want to do timing of, you know, I think today let's go more conservative. Or I think just if this is a long run, that, you know, that's just, I don't know. My suggestion is not to do anything today. Or, you know, we can always, I think we did it last fall or something. I think we kind of looked at it. And did we,
No, we have not changed.
Yeah.
We have decided at each meeting that we are where we should be.
Yeah. I mean, if we had some insights.
I'm just asking for that decision.
If there was some inside scoop from a great economist or something, then maybe we could consider something different.
You know any economists?
Great economists.
Well, Robbie's our issue. I'll be glad to go talk to Robbie.
It just comes up. I mean, he's not.
I know.
So really, but at some point.
Every time
budget,
you need to shift the attitude of PARS as a long-term investment. Think endowment. It's for pension funds, so it's long-term investment. And you take their strategies over the long term, it's there. You take the blip of the last couple of years, it's tough, but it's also tough for their competitors. Also, it's tough for CalPERS. The issue of why we're in a PARS, or there an organization like that exists, was they were supposed to perform better than CalPERS. Mm-hmm. So CalPERS was doing, their rates were way down, losing a lot of money, and they had PARS and got that. CalPERS has an alternate, has a separate unit, independent of their investment function, which does the same thing. And their pitch is, we don't have to charge that profit margin they make, that extra 25 basis points or whatever they get out of this thing, because we're a government agency, so we'll manage that. So that's the biggest next competitor to PARS would be the CalPERS. See, in the old council, when we first went into that with who was the bankruptcy lawyer that was mayor? Anyway, they were so anti-PERS. Rick Barnett or any of those. If you said you were going to go give money to PERS directly to manage that, they'd say you're crazy, because they were trying to get out. Barnett was trying to get out of CalPERS and do that fold out. So that's one alternative. In the investment strategy we have, we said that we would look at this every 3 to 5 years and give a manager 3 to 5 years to operate, but give that cycle. And we're at that point now that we could take on and say, what's it look like for our alternatives? Is there a better way to manage that money? And that would probably help the natural. The showing these guys quarterly, along with these other reports, their perspective is over here, and then you show this, and it doesn't look so good. If we showed this comparison to CalPERS, compared to other long-term investors that are managing long-term trusts, then we help maybe provide a perspective. You still get the same kind of questions, but at least you have some perspective. I thought we had a report.
We did decide to do it only once a year.
Well, you said they were looking at it quarterly. That's why I was asking.
We're not presenting to the council.
Robbie has just asked because he came in and asked about it because he's got a separate interest. You know, he's been around long enough.
Right.
He's been here 6 years or 7 years, and he's kind of like, hey, how's that doing, type of thing. And he, you know.
Well, it's probably time for another vaccination shot.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, boy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a valid question. And, mm-hmm. and nice to have a mayor that cares about that, so.
I'm just asking if there's anyone who thinks we should make any changes in we can make a change in PARS, but we probably aren't going to do that. But our investment selection category, is there anyone who wants to make a motion to change that?
I'm not a committee, I can't make a motion, but I...
No, I'm just saying, does anyone want to?
I support your vice chairman's perspective on that. This is not the right time to...
To change it.
To hop in the market and make a change.
Okay, so there is no motion to change it.
I just leave it the same for now. It's long term, and you know, the market's up, the market's down. We can see the January was 535, it went to 522, now it's back to almost 531. So it's kind of just hanging out. You know, it's not. I just hang out.
Okay.
Lynn, did you want to talk too about did you guys already talk about the email from?
No, well, sort of. I think, did everybody get a chance to read that about the Orange County investment pool?
Yep.
It's kind of boilerplate.
Yeah. If you have any concerns, I've talked to Sherry. She's offered to come to this committee and talk to you if you have issues or whatever. Because her concern is the mindset of, you know, the serenity of the various investors. So she's very happy to come here if you want to, and she offered that. And I just extend that, Lynn, you know, if you have any questions. And, you know.
I thought it was interesting that in that next to last paragraph, that the voluntary pool participants are less than 2%, the ability to withdraw, which are the cities that aren't mandated that we have to be in it, whereas the county agencies are mandated they have to invest in it, in the airport, that kind of thing. So...
I don't think it's a need, at least in my perspective, to have her come out here.
She's just offering for any
spoiler. Which you can maybe thank her. And
thank you for your reassurance.
I think it's great that we have this compared to the fellow who served in jail. Yeah. I mean, he was making money for 8 years in a row, and then all of a sudden when the market turned,
she was very concerned because after the banks had problems, she right away got inquiries like, where's our money, how are we doing, all those things. So she's trying to over-communicate and be available, extra available. So
that's good.
That is good.
I know Lynn had wanted to get this out to everybody, so.
With good reason for me.
Good information we learned about the banking system.
In the States.
Okay, so PARS is done. We have nothing else to say on PARS? No? Okay, recruitment of new members. This is Tom Molloy, who we are trying to recruit, frankly. And, you know, we do have these meetings only 4 times a year.
That's good news. 1 hour.
And I was thinking of the next meeting of being, is it July 18th, I think I said? Oh, I should have written it down somewhere. The third July week, 18th. Wednesday of July.
Is that conflict with your separate board?
Well, that's why I'm suggesting this date. I'm on another board that has their rules as to meet the same day that this board meets. And so but they've changed it, you know, for this month. And, you know, so I'm juggling month by month. But
July 18th.
Is that the third Wednesday of July?
Actually, it's July 19th.
The 18th is a Tuesday. Yeah.
So July
19th
is that okay?
No problem. The 19th?
Okay. Yeah. Wednesday, 8:30 as usual.
I am likely not going to
not
be here.
Not going to be here.
Likely. It's not for certain.
Okay. And
so
is there...
Tentatively pencil it for that? Day?
Well, no, I'm saying I can do it that day.
I'll send out a note to everybody if you want to just go ahead and confirm it right now. Let's just confirm it.
The other board is moving it to the fourth week of July.
Good with me.
And the problem is I'm secretary of the other board, so I can't not be there ever. I don't know what they would do without me because they don't have anybody to fill in.
Yeah, I might be, I just don't know.
You but might be gone.
But let's, yeah. I have it, I put it in.
Okay, all right, so July 19th is our tentative meeting date for next meeting.
Got it.
In terms of future discussion items, is there anything you want to add? Shall I do some research on these sewer fees? Because I'm thinking that might fall in...
What, the sewer fees?
You know, yeah, Tom was asking about sewer fees and where that money is and how we keep that money. And maybe
that money is separately identified.
It's not an investment, so...
No, it's separately identified and it's used specifically. It was approved by the council. It's designated funds. It can't be used for... Its single purpose can only be used for sewer.
So where are the actual funds? If they're invested, that would be our...
Oh, okay.
Business, so to speak,
yeah.
Right?
So, yeah. So basically, like, all of our funds, like cash, even though restricted cash that we receive from the county for this, like, a sewer purposes, assessment purposes, it's all pulled in here. So it's not separately
okay.
identified.
So it's,
so
handled
it's in our pool account.
It's separately accounted for the purposes of our
yes.
CAFR
okay.
and
yes.
our financial statements, but it is.
But the actual money is in
it's pooled within our respective investments. There are no separate investment policies for that.
Okay.
What does that bring in a year? What would
about 440,000?
Yeah.
Okay. And so it's part of this number.
Yeah, it's all part of in the pool. Yeah, we're in, yeah. we don't separate
yes.
that
okay.
in a separate bank account.
So typically 400,000 is not enough to do a significant project. So that money is pooled over multiple years because you typically projects run anywhere from $1.5 to $2.5 million on a sewer investment project. So typically what we do, and the problem if you do small projects, you don't have bidders that will come in and mess with it. Because a lot of guys will say, hey, I'm not going to mess with a $500,000 project. I got a $3 million project over here. You know. So typically we pool all of our resources over multiple years and do design. And we the only thing we use, we have a sewer maintenance fee. The thing that we do, the catch basins and all those are cleaned on an annual basis. So we charge it against that as well. So any sewer related activity. And right now we are in the process of doing a master plan and evaluation of the status of all of ours. In other words, they run a camera line through all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing that. And there's twofold reasons. One, to find out where our system was built, you know, it's the infrastructure is old, and see where we stand, where there are leaks or roofs or, you know, et cetera. Number two is, to the extent that you were talking earlier, the lot splits under SB9, SB10, if our infrastructure cannot support it, mm-hmm. we can actually say no.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things. So we're looking at, when they're doing the filming this time, we've added an extra thing where we're adding GIS to know capacities. So are we running 60% on this line, 80% or whatever? Mm-hmm. So if you came in with your property and said, I want to, at the junction, I want to create a junction there, and we say, great, you're going to have to expand our line because our line can't do it. We can charge them, and the SB9 then project becomes a lot more expensive for them, and you've got developers saying, no, I'm not messing with that. So that's the only criteria we can use. We can't touch roads because roads are not they won't let you, the state won't let you say no to it. But so we're trying to assess and be able to have factual data, current data, that says here's where all of our system is, the status of a system, meaning what the lines are, et cetera. And then what capacities we are at various junctures, so that we can tell exactly where we are and what's our system like. And we're putting that onto a GIS data mm-hmm. system so that cool. we can track it online on a regular basis. So that's what we're doing. And that the expense of that master, you know, the studying and all that, that's being paid for by a sewer assessment right now. That's out of that fund.
We have nothing to do with setting the budget.
No.
But it would be interesting to see a budget once in a while, like every year.
I can give you a budget. Yeah, we have them online. They're
well,
online.
We do just do that next month. Put
sure.
a budget in here,
yeah.
and
yeah.
it is relevant. I mean,
yeah, no, happily,
well,
happily
yeah,
share with
excess or deficit in cash flow.
No.
Yeah, well, it kind of confirms the treasurer's
sure.
report about money coming in, money going out. So it. I think we could justify asking
sure.
for that.
This question is just more curiosity, but you mentioned the failure of the wall over there on Cannon. Was there any insurance involved in that?
There was insurance, and we had FEMA reimbursed us.
FEMA, okay.
Brad was actually on the council at the time.
Yep.
The mayor.
You were the mayor, I guess, mm-hmm. okay? And so there was a FEMA claim, and we received state monies, and then we received insurance monies.
Yeah.
So that was a combination. We have not had any there were actually two failures, not to one, there were two.
I remember that.
And we have not had any failures. Now we require hydrology reports, et cetera, on different things. So practices have changed a lot mm-hmm. since that time. But I think there's even county money that we received at that time. Was it Bill Campbell was in office, I think? He gave some money to us. So.
Bob Bill was on the council at the time. And I was driving down the street when I saw that. Mm-hmm. And he was like my next door neighbor. And I said, Bob, you know what's happening over here? And he was shocked. He says, what? I says, the wall's failing. Mm-hmm. And he says, coming right down on the road. And
I mean, it was
a, yeah. It was a very big deal.
I think it was a long time to get that money.
If you want to see the live files, they're all in that store. And people were actually
years. So the winter rains didn't cause
issues. We had one tree fall down on the fence.
Okay, well, that's
unfortunately, some of our trees are older and they're saturated, the ground saturated. So when we had some winds like a week or two ago, not bad winds, but when the ground saturated, the roots can't hold anymore. And right. So it fell on a fence, and that was the extent of any damage we've had.
Wow. Yes,
I always worry about the pine trees on Taft. That's the ones I worry about the most.
Yeah.
Because those are the oldest and the really
tall. They look nice.
That's why Mike spends so much time on Taft.
Yeah. I mean, every time the wind blows, I feel sorry for the poor guy. Because he just got it cleaned up.
And
you drive down the street and here it is. You never know anybody touched it. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying to add to the next agenda for future discussion, let's just spend a couple minutes on see what we're spending our money on, where it comes from.
Without breaking the ice, I won't give you too much of we spend over 50% of our budget in law enforcement on our annual contract with the sheriff. That's just, and that is not atypical.
Which is low for a city, really.
It's not atypical for a city to do that. So
75% for fire and police.
Some cities in North County spend more than 50% because they have their own police force.
Right,
so they have to deal with their own pensions as well. So
I'm assuming we don't have the populace of Villa Park is not looking for us to defund the police.
No, he wouldn't like that.
No, we actually have one of the lowest crime rates in the state, so we're actually very, very fortunate.
Yeah.
The sheriff does a great job, and all the deputies, so you know, all the deputies who's in here, we're not paying for all of them because they just use this as a place to rest. So the unincorporated or whatever, we invite them in to come here. So we really only pay for one deputy at a time, 24/7. But the other guys who say, hey, come have lunch, whatever.
Yeah.
The black and white presence is wonderful.
I love to see it.
And your Belinda deputies stop on their way here and they eat. We let them turn on TV for lunch and, you know, whatever that.
But, you know, presence. I was talking to the mayor of Anaheim, and she was all proud because Disneyland lets them do the same thing. She was telling me, oh, we don't spend that much as people think on police because we let off-duty policemen come to Disneyland.
Well, the presence here has, you know, we've eliminated a lot. So you can see that, you know, if you really want to know how many deputies, just go back and see how many of those engines are running, the black and whites, because they won't turn their cars off when they're on duty.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of those cars are turned off because they have to restart all the computer online stuff, so. But anyway, we get very good service, and we're very happy with the sheriff.
Okay, are there any other items you want to put on the next agenda? Further business? Oh,
you want to talk to, the appointment, if you're interested, would have to go through the city council. So, and there's just a form we have to fill out just because they attach it to it and type of thing. So if you're interested, you just talk to Lynn and you guys can work out. We can get it done fairly quickly. It's not a problem. It's just a formality the council created this committee, so they have to appoint the members.
And there's no financial reporting on this committee?
Not about the police record or anything like that. Do you have to look into that? Or
the what?
Well, the strip search.
So is no further business? Being none, I will adjourn the meeting.
Thanks for the invite.
Thanks for coming.